This is the Create Your Own Life Show, episode 742 with Maria Konnikova.
Success does a disservice to you, especially at the beginning, because that way you're never forced to analyze, did I get lucky or am I actually good? Are my decisions good or not? And you never build up those muscles. You don't build up those tools of self-analysis if you're getting lucky at the beginning. Now, if you're failing, it forces you to go back and to think through your thought process, to think through your decisions, to think through why you failed, and to start that process of disentangling what you can improve versus what was bad luck. And that's how you learn. That's how you get better. And the best players are the ones who are able to play through failure and not the ones who just got lucky and succeeded at the beginning.
This is the Create Your Own Life Show, where we interview people that are world-class performers, from Super Bowl champions to New York Times bestsellers to billionaires. We figure out what makes them tick and unpack it for you to do the same. I'm Jeremy Ryan Slate, and every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, we help you to create your own life. Hey, what is up, everybody? Jeremy Slate here, and welcome to this latest episode of the Create Your Own Life Show. This is episode number 742. It is Monday, July 13th, and welcome back to the show. If this is your first time checking us out, welcome. I'm excited you are checking us out. We are going to take a look at a very, very interesting subject today. I had a lot of fun putting this episode together, and also, even before the interview, a lot of fun researching for it, as we're going to take a look at, I guess, science behind how poker works and what it's really like reacting to how other players play, you know, what it's like, you know, to win the game. It's interesting. So our guest today is Maria Konnikova, and she has a really big background in social science. She's also a New York Times bestselling author and a New Yorker contributor, and she made a decision that, you know what, I'm going to go for playing poker. And she actually wrote a book about it called The Biggest Bluff, How I Learned to Pay Attention, Master Myself, and Win. And she decided she wanted to study poker, but the way she was going to do it was being somebody that hadn't really played, I guess, other than, you know, for fun with friends or whatnot. She was going to learn how to play poker and drive into it. So she went and located Poker Hall of Fame inductee Eric Seidel and convinced him to mentor her. And from there, she just went into actually playing in the World Series of Poker. So we're going to take a look at, you know, what it's like playing a game like that at the highest level, you know, why people make the decisions they do, you know, what things a player is monitoring in other players when they do things. This is a really, really interesting episode, and I had a lot of fun talking to Maria. She's a very engaging guest. She has a lot to teach and talk about, and we're not just going to learn a lot about poker per se today. We're going to learn a lot about how people interact, how they take social cues from other people, and, you know, how maybe there's ways you can apply that in other areas of your life from what we're going to talk about today. But before we jump into this episode, I want to quickly tell you about today's sponsor. This episode is sponsored by Audible, and thankfully they are offering all of you guys out there, you Create Your Own Life listeners, a free month of their service and a free audiobook. You know, what better way to do it than to pick up Maria's book, The Biggest Bluff, How I Learned to Pay Attention, Master Myself, and Win, and learn more about what we're going to talk about today, and also recommend that book to a friend. It would be amazing if you did that. So you can get that book or any other book for free, courtesy of Audible, if you just head over to jeremyryanslate.com/book. That is jeremyryanslate.com/book. Also, as you all know, I have a huge mission to help a lot of people and just really impact this planet in a huge, huge way. And you guys can actually help me do that. And it's a pretty easy way. I don't think it's a huge ask, hopefully. And that's by rating, reviewing, and subscribing to the show. You can do that right now by picking up your mobile device and locating your podcast app, going in there and leaving us a review. Or you can head over to ratethispodcast.com/CYOL and leave us a review that way, whichever is easier for you. Honestly, if your phone is on you, pull it out right now and let's do it. Today's review comes from WillHung328, says, "Live your life without regrets. I like the diverse speakers and backgrounds sharing their wisdom for creating your own life. What I learned is we need to stop looking for the magic bullet and to take action each day to create the life you want." Thank you so much, WillHung328. Everyone, if you want to hear your review read on the air, head over to Apple Podcasts or pull out your device right now, or head over to ratethispodcast.com/CYOL. All right, without further ado, let's get into this interview, diving into the world of poker and the human thought process around it, Maria Konnikova. Welcome to the Create Your Own Life show, Maria Konnikova.
Thank you so much for having me.
Maria, I am so excited to have you on this morning. I finished your book just recently, The Biggest Bluff, How I Learned to Pay Attention, Master Myself, and Win. And I'm just really, really intrigued, not just about the world of poker, which, you know, you state, hey, this isn't a poker book. This is about the study of the things around it. So I'm really kind of interested to dive into a lot of the social science aspects of it. So thanks for hanging out today.
Absolutely. I'm so happy to be here, Jeremy.
So I guess, like, looking at it, Maria, like, you know, you've written other books, you've done a lot of other stuff. Why did you decide to dive in and study poker?
I did not know that I was going to be studying poker initially at all. I'm not a poker player. I'm not someone who had any interest in the game. I wanted to write about luck. I became really interested in just the power that luck has in our lives and learning to tell the difference between the things we control and the things that are outside of our control. Now, how do you disentangle that? How do you tell the difference between that? And it was something that I really wanted to write about, but it's a huge topic and it's really difficult to just have a philosophical book about that. I needed a way in. And luckily enough, someone much smarter than I am had already thought of something that could help. And that somebody was John von Neumann, the father of game theory, also the creator of the computer. The guy was pretty smart. He did a lot of stuff. And when I read his kind of foundational text of game theory, The Theory of Games, I learned that not only was he a poker player, but he actually thought that poker could help with the exact thing that I wanted. Poker was the foundation of game theory. And he said, I don't like games. Games are usually boring. A game like chess is solvable. There's perfect information. You can see all the pieces. Here's the board. Here are the chess pieces. And if you give me enough computing power, I can tell you exactly what you're supposed to do. At the other extreme, if you give me a game like roulette, also boring because you know what? There's nothing to it. It's all gambling. There's nothing I can do. And in between sits poker, which is a game of incomplete information. And so there's information you have, there's information you have, there's information we both have, and everyone needs to make the best decision they possibly can, knowing that they're not going to know everything. So stemming from what they know and then inferring the things that they don't, how do you make the best decision faced with uncertainty, knowing that you're never going to know it all? If you can figure that out, then you really have a good handle on how to make decisions in life, because life is a game of incomplete information. You're never going to be 100% sure of anything. It's impossible. It's life. And when I started reading about this, I thought, wow, this is really interesting. What is this poker thing? So I started reading about poker and just thought, bingo, this actually works. Why don't I learn this game? Why don't I get someone really good to teach me and see what I can accomplish? But not really in terms of poker, although that's interesting and I'd like to set some goals for myself and actually try to become good, but also in terms of just answering that question, figuring out where skill ends and luck begins.
You know, it's funny because it makes me think of, I don't know if you ever saw the movie, like, The Dark Knight. Tom Hardy plays the character Bane in the Batman movie. At a certain point in the movie, he's brought in by kind of this rich guy that wants to create, you know, like this control in society, and he uses Bane to do it. And at a certain point, Bane turns on the guy that brings him in, and he looks and he goes, so you think you're in control, huh? And I think that's like what we're looking at, which what's really interesting. I've heard you talk about an experiment of having people flip quarters.
Yeah.
And you did it online. I think you had done one in person as well. And it's kind of this illusion that we're in control. And I kind of think this is a good setup for our conversation about poker. So I guess what is in your mind is the illusion that we're in control?
This term, the illusion of control, is something that a psychologist named Ellen Langer first started exploring in the 1970s. And she had this really cool study where she had people predict the outcome of a coin toss. And I mean, you and I know that that's not a skill, right?
Yeah,
that tossing a coin, that's just total luck of the draw. You have no idea how the coin is going to fall, and predicting it, likewise, there's no skill in that. But she actually rigged the results. So she had people guess, and sometimes she would just say, no, yes, you know, you're right, you're wrong, but have it seem random. So our brains have this idea of what randomness looks like, right? And if it's 10 times in a row, that's not random, right? No. We can't fathom that that actually is randomness, that randomness doesn't care what it looks like, it's random. But we want it to be a little bit more evenly distributed. So she had a condition like that. And then she had one where your correct guesses, where she was like, oh yeah, you're brilliant, you correctly guessed whether this coin was going to land heads or tails, where they all clustered at the beginning, and then one where they clustered at the end. And a funny thing happened. So Ellen Langer was at Harvard University, and she was doing this with Harvard students. You'd think they were pretty intelligent people, or at least smart enough. And in the condition where they, at the beginning, had a lot of correct guesses, afterwards, when she asked them a bunch of questions like, I am good at predicting the outcomes of coin tosses, their answers got really wonky. They said, yeah, I actually am good at this. I'll become better with practice. Yes, if I have more time, I'm actually going to get better. I'd be better if I weren't as distracted. Absolutely. Put me in a quiet room with no distractions and I'm going to master this. It was just bizarre because you'd see these really smart people thinking that they were good at predicting the outcome of a coin toss. And it just blew my mind. And so she said, this is the illusion of control, where you actually create this feeling in an environment where there's no reason for it, but it's an uncertain environment. People take more agency over their actions than is actually warranted. And she used this bizarre example of a coin toss to show, look, it's even in cases like this. And when I was a grad student, my advisor and I actually recreated this and we did it online and it still worked. So even to this day, we were able to get that effect. People thought that they could be good at this thing. And it just shows the limitations of our thinking, and it shows how much our minds crave to be in control, crave agency, that we really want to feel like we are the authors of our outcomes. And it's really tough for us to admit that, you know, sometimes it's just random and you have nothing to do with it.
Well, I guess like bringing this around to poker then, the question I had about this, Maria, like looking at it that way, is anybody really good at poker, or is it just that they're really good at playing and maybe confusing or fooling others?
Well, no, I think that that's a false dichotomy. I think that's part of being good at poker. Poker is definitely a game of skill. I mean, there's no question about it. And it's a very easy way to answer that. And that's, in poker, unlike any other game in a casino, you can win with the worst hand and you can lose with the best hand. So it's really about the player. It's not about the cards. In fact, there was a study that I cite in my book, which analyzed hundreds of thousands of hands of online poker and found that the best hand won an average of 12% of the time. That means 88% of the time it was the best player. That's crazy. That's a crazy number. That's how much skilled players can do. And so I think that the skill comes in several layers. Part of it is a mathematical knowledge. It's knowing how much to bet, what cards you should be holding, how the board interacts. It's actually, you do need to know those things. You do need to know how to calculate basic odds. You do need to know how to make mathematically correct decisions. That's crucial. If you don't know that, you're going to make big mistakes and you're going to lose money. But the other part of it is psychological. It's knowing, okay, the math tells me one thing, but I've been paying attention and I understand these people enough that I'm actually going to put the math aside for these reasons, because I think that this person just is someone who's really stubborn and doesn't like to fold. So even though the math tells me I should be bluffing here, I'm not going to, because I realize that this person is going to call me. And sometimes it's the opposite, where you say, you know what, this isn't the best situation. The math tells me I shouldn't be bluffing. And yet this person has shown themselves to be weak and has shown that they actually basically never call when you bet three times. So I'm going to do that now. So it's a combination of the two. You need to understand the math, and then you have to have, when you deviate from the math, it has to be for good psychological reasons. So you have to be able to read people as well as read the statistics.
That's a super, super interesting point. I guess, you know, bringing it back around to how, you know, you got into the world of poker, you actually convinced Eric Seidel, who is one of the top poker players in the world, to really teach you. And I love the description you give of this first meeting, of you meeting Eric. So I guess, you know, how did you convince him to really, you know, take you through this journey? And what was that like?
I really did have to convince him. It's not like he said, yeah, this sounds awesome, let's do it. Eric has never taken on a student in his life. ever. And he's been playing since the 80s. So this is a guy who's been around for a while. And he doesn't really like to teach other poker players. He just likes to focus on playing. And he is so humble and self-effacing. One of the first things he asked me, he's like, well, I'm not actually going to be in this book, am I? And I just, my heart just sank. I thought, uh-oh, there goes the book premise. And so I had to really convince him why this was worth his while. And I think ultimately there were a few things in my favor. I wasn't a poker player coming and asking for lessons. I was someone who didn't know how many cards were in a deck, saying, hey, I'm a blank slate. I have a psychology background. I'm a journalist. Teach me. And he thought, huh, interesting. Can that kind of thinking still win? Can someone without that mathematical knowledge, that mathematical foundation, by the way, lest I scare anyone away with the math, I last took a math class in high school. So it's not like I'm a math wizard.
As someone that barely passed stats, I can appreciate that.
Excellent, excellent. So he thought, can I take someone who's just strong at psychology and not necessarily focused on all of these things that all of the young players are working on right now, the mathematics, the modeling, all of that. Can I take her and actually make her competitive? Can the psychological approach still win? And for him, I think that was a very interesting challenge and an interesting test of philosophy. So that was on the one hand. On the other hand, I think that he appreciated the opportunity to spread the love of poker to people who weren't already poker players. My background was different. My audience was different. I was someone coming from the outside, and he loves the game. Like, he loves the game for the right reasons. It's not about money for him. It's about the play. It's about the intellectual challenge. It's about how it can make you into a better thinker. And I think that he saw in me an opportunity to spread that further. And so he decided to take advantage of that and to gamble on me.
Well, I guess then looking at it then, like, you know, you mentioned poker making you a better thinker. Do you feel like poker made you a better thinker? And if so, how?
Absolutely. I mean, without a doubt. I think it's made me a better thinker. I think it's made me a better human in a lot of ways. The most important thing is that poker does teach you how to think probabilistically, which is something that our minds just don't learn well at all. We suck at probabilities. I mean, we don't know 1 from 10%. And that's a bit of an exaggeration, but it's not really. It's really difficult for the human mind to deal in anything that's not certainty. I mean, think about your own experience. How do you relate to the weather app on your phone? How do you actually interpret the results of, do I need to bring an umbrella or not?
It's one of those situations like, oh, it's the only profession where you can be wrong 80% of the time and still get paid. That's what I've always said about weather.
Exactly. So what's your relationship to that? And how do you feel when you lug your umbrella around and it doesn't rain? And you're like, you were said 80%. Are you?
We just did this past weekend. We were up in Lake Placid, New York, and we took my dad up there for Father's Day. It was supposed to rain. He brought his umbrella. And what do you know? It didn't rain. He goes, every time I bring this, it doesn't rain.
There you go. There you go. And if it said 80%, to the human mind, that's like, well, it's going to rain. I'm going to bring an umbrella. 20% is a lot. It doesn't mean the Weather Channel was wrong. 20% happens 20% of the time. That is a lot of time. And poker really teaches you that. Poker teaches you that you can make the right decision. Bringing an umbrella, if it says 80% chance of rain, is the right decision. So you can do that. You can make the right decision and the outcome still goes against you. It doesn't rain. Or in poker, you lose and you lose money. But as long as you made the right decision, as long as you got your money in as a favorite, as long as you didn't bring your umbrella when it was a 10% chance of rain, just in case, then you're all set. You should keep bringing that umbrella every single time because eventually 80% is going to rain. It's just that variance in the immediate term doesn't care that, well, it hasn't rained the past 5 days. There's no conception of that. And especially in poker, you know, probability has amnesia. It doesn't care what happened last time. It doesn't care who you are. It's just completely impersonal. And poker teaches you that and teaches you to separate the decision from the outcome and teaches you to focus on the decision process and getting it in as a favorite and how to think that way. And then don't worry about the result because the result's going to go against you sometimes. Even if you're a 98% favorite, that 2% is going to happen. It's going to hurt. And you will learn what 2% feels like. And you will learn that 2% is actually a hell of a lot.
I want to quickly tell you about today's sponsor. This episode is sponsored by Gusto, and this is actually the payroll management system that we use
at my company, Command Your Brand. We've used them for years, absolutely loved them, and they offer modern, easy payroll, benefits, and HR service to small business across the country. They were even named Best Online Payroll by PC Mag, and as a listener, you'll actually get $100 free just for trying the service via an Amazon gift card if you just head over to jeremyryanslate.com/gusto and get your free trial. As I said, we have used Gusto at Command Your Brand to run all of our payroll, handle all of our taxes, all of that filing, and it makes it just a snap. We absolutely love them. So if you want to get started with Gusto and get a $100 Amazon gift card just for getting started, head over to jeremyryanslate.com/gusto and get started with Gusto today.
I guess then looking at that, Maria, like, you know, you've talked about kind of the psychological aspects too of a good poker player, right? Like how they can, you know, kind of play the other people at the table. And even if they don't have a good hand, somehow manage to get through it. And, you know, we look at some of these players like, you know, Phil Ivey, Chris Moneymaker, and Eric Seidel, and some of them have some funny getups about them. And I guess like looking at that, do you see that as a tell when they have something like that? Or do you recommend, you know, kind of not wearing something like that to the table?
So I don't wear anything at all. Well, that sounds wrong. I don't wear glasses. I think that the fewer things you have for other people to take note of, the better, because usually you give off more information than you're collecting. And also, have you ever worn sunglasses indoors? It's uncomfortable and you don't see as well. So you're actually not taking in as much information. I don't get it. I mean, Phil Ivey is the best of the best of the best. He is on a different level. Whatever Phil Ivey does, let him do it. But he's got his reasons. I can't get into that. I have no idea. I've never met Phil Ivey. I've met most of the legends of the poker world, but he is one I have never met. But I do think that unless you have some extraordinary ability, you're inevitably going to do things like put your glasses on at certain moments and then take them off and forget about it at other moments. And that's going to give information. You're going to play with, you know, your hat or play with your chip protector or whatever it is, and you're going to give off information. And so I think the best thing that you can do for your game and for being more difficult to read is to just keep it as simple as possible, as few moving parts as possible, because then there's nothing to remember.
You know, it's funny, Maria, like, not that I ever lie to my wife, but I actually physically can't lie to my wife because I wear contacts, and I didn't realize apparently, like, I touch my contacts a lot when I am telling something that's close to not being true. So my wife's like, oh, I always know when you're not telling the truth. So I think we do have these tells sometimes, even if it's not in the poker world, when we don't realize it.
Absolutely. I mean, we have unconscious things that we're not really controlling. And by the way, it's not usually the face. We're pretty good at controlling our face, and the poker face is something of a myth. So you're touching your contacts, I think it has more to do with your hands than it does with anything else. And what we learn from poker is actually a lot of the tells are in the hands, in how people handle chips and how they handle cards. So our bodies do give off a lot more information than we realize.
Well, I guess speaking of chips, getting into a different type of chips here, I was listening to an interview not too long ago with an FBI investigator, and he had mentioned that there was this one guy he had picked up and he interrogated him for an hour. He got nothing out of him. And then there was this other guy that he'd been around for a while. He usually interrogated people while eating a bag of potato chips. He walked in, he'd sit down, he'd talk to the guy about the bag of chips, and within 10 minutes, he'd have everything that he needed to have from the person because he'd be willing to tell. Have you seen food as an influence for, I guess, kind of changing the way we react or respond, whether it's in the poker world or just in the everyday world?
Well, in the everyday world, sure. I think that food definitely has a big effect on people because we make decisions differently when we're hungry versus not. It affects the way we process information. And there's actually a psychological rationale for the term hangry. So that term is brilliant because
those Snickers commercials were actually made after me. But anyway.
So exactly. At the poker table, it's also true. However, do not eat at the poker table. The poker table is dirty. The chips are dirty. Everything is dirty. Don't do it. No food. Poker tables and food do not mix. You don't want to touch food with your hands, and then you don't want to touch the chips with the same hands, and people do it all the time. And poker players are just the dirtiest thing, and poker tables are the dirtiest thing, and chips are... I've touched chips that probably haven't been washed in decades, and it's gross.
Oh, God.
Before COVID, and now I don't know the next time I will set foot at a live poker table, probably, you know, second half of 2021, 2022. I don't know. So you got me off on a tangent there, but it's an important tangent about the world of poker. Know this, people. Poker is dirty, but not in the cheating way, in a way of actual physical dirt.
I guess then, you know, looking at a different concept here, like, you know, we do have different backgrounds. We have different life experiences. We maybe have different upbringings. Like, I guess when we're looking at like background experience, maybe adversity and things we've been through, how does that affect how we play poker? Have you seen an effect on how we play poker?
Yeah, I actually do think that it matters. I think that everything you are comes out at the poker table. What I didn't realize when I got into this game, sure, when you asked earlier, has it made you a better decision maker? I was able to answer that. And that's what I thought I was going to get out of it. So that wasn't surprising to me. It surprised me that poker was basically like therapy on steroids. That
wow.
All of your issues are going to come out at one point or another, because in tournament poker, you're just playing for hours and hours, you know, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14 hours a day. You're sitting there. You can't get up because it's not a cash game. If you do, your chips are still in play. So you have to be there, and then you wake up and you do it again in the morning. You get tired. You get exhausted. You have to just keep constantly being on and making good decisions. And that's draining. It takes a lot out of you. So inevitably, all of your issues are going to come out. All of your hangups are going to come out. And so I think you bring who you are to the poker table. And unless you deal with your issues, they're going to affect your decisions. It was true of me. I brought a lot of baggage, as it turns out, to the table in terms of gender stereotypes and how I had internalized a lot of them without realizing it. And I do think that people who come from different walks of life, they bring that with them, and that will affect how they process information. That will affect how they make decisions. No one is a computer. We're not objective guides through our own brains. Oftentimes we can't see our own shortcomings until we're forced to. And poker, the reason I said it's a therapy session, if you don't deal with your issues, you're going to lose money. So you actually have cash on the table, in a sense. And so it does take some awareness, some metacognitive awareness of yourself. But once you realize that you have issues that are affecting how you play, then you have to deal with them, because otherwise you're not going to be making rational decisions. One of the best players in the world, who didn't come from a great background at all, was homeless for part of his childhood and really came from nothing. He realized at some point on his way up that he had major anger issues, and that would affect how he played. That would put him on tilt, which is a poker term for becoming emotional and letting that affect your decision making. And he actually got help and worked through it. And that helped him become just one of the best players in the world.
It's interesting, Maria, because I'm a big believer, and it's just from, you know, we've done almost 800 interviews now, and like from all the entrepreneurs and individuals I've talked to, I'm a big believer that adversity kind of breeds somebody that's more resilient and more willing to do. Like, I had a billionaire real estate investor on the show that at 25 was in drug rehab. And he said like that really that the biggest thing was they told him he was never going to get out and never going to do better. Or I had Kara Golden, who's the CEO of Hint Water, on the show a couple years ago. And she had said like, everybody told her no. So she actually eventually got a Whole Foods to say, cool, we'll take your water on commission, and then sold it all out in the first day. It's the ones that are really willing to work through that adversity that it changes the way they think and operate.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And in fact, one of the earliest lessons I learned in my poker journey came from Dan Harrington, who's also one of the greats of the game. And I met him, Eric introduced me, pretty early on. And I was complaining a little bit to Dan about how I wasn't doing well at the beginning. Obviously, you know, I didn't know what I was doing. But he said, good. And I said, excuse me. And he told me that the only way to become a better player is to fail. Success does a disservice to you, especially at the beginning, because that way you're never forced to analyze, did I get lucky or am I actually good? Are my decisions good or not? And you never build up those muscles. You don't build up those tools of self-analysis if you're getting lucky at the beginning. Now, if you're failing, it forces you to go back and to think through your thought process, to think through your decisions, to think through why you failed, and to start that process of disentangling what you can improve versus what was bad luck. And that's how you learn. That's how you get better. And the best players are the ones who are able to play through failure and not the ones who just got lucky and succeeded at the beginning.
Well, Maria, I know we're getting a little low on time here, but our listeners were really excited for this interview. So we did take a couple questions for you here. So Mike Woodward wants to know, so many people play poker with emotion driving decisions. How do you stay focused and not let emotions drive your playing?
That is such an important question. So we were just talking about tilt, and I think that there are a few steps to answering that question. One, sit down with yourself, analyze kind of your past, think about the times you've played before. When have you gotten emotional? What are your triggers? What are the things that make you tilt? What are the things that get to you? And actually write them down physically. I want you to take a pen and paper or type it in an Excel spreadsheet if you want, but I recommend the pen and paper and make a list. These are the things that actually get to me. Now, for each one of those things, you have to think, okay, what am I going to do the next time that happens? Because in the moment, you're still going to get emotional, even if you've identified that trigger. And so what you need to do is formulate a game plan in advance so that in the moment when you're tired, when you're already getting emotional, you don't have to think. So that you know, oh, okay, this is how I'm going to handle it. How am I going to cool off that hot emotion? And there are really great techniques. A lot of them involve, you know, getting up and stepping away, take a circle away from the table when you see yourself getting emotional, physically distance yourself or mentally distance yourself. Sometimes it's great to just take a deep breath, close your eyes, and pretend that you're someone else, that you're, you know, fly on the wall looking down at this poker game and you're not actually Maria. And, oh, look, Maria is getting annoyed by this. How interesting. Because once you remove yourself from that hot, immediate situation, you're able to do the final step, which is get rid of that emotion. Realize that it's happening and you're not actually going to ever get rid of it, but discount it. Say, okay, I'm letting this affect my decision process. And now I'm not going to anymore. Now I'm going to think logically. The reason I was about to raise was because this guy pissed me off and I think that he's bullying me and that really got to me. But now I know better. I've identified that. I've put it aside and I'm not going to raise because I'm not going to engage in that. It's not personal. It's just the cards. It's a really powerful way to de-escalate what's going on. But in order to do that, you do have to really do some serious self-analysis and identify what makes you emotional because it's different for every person.
And Marco Stankovic wants to know, what's the most important rule in poker, either written or unwritten?
Pay attention.
You have to observe. I totally understand that. Well, Maria, just one final question for me then as we wind down here. If we were to take a look at it, you know, look at 21-year-old Maria versus Maria now, what's one thing you believed at 21 that you don't believe now?
That's a very interesting question. I think I was much less aware of the role of luck in everything. And I think that now I just don't believe that anymore. I don't believe, but something that I definitely believed early on was, yeah, you know, the American dream is real. I'm an immigrant. I came here from Russia. I was born in Russia when it was the Soviet Union. I came here and my God, you know, I'm living the American dream. I got into college. Look at me. That's BS. I got lucky. And for a lot of people, that's not a reality. And that's something that I've come to realize. And I've realized that that whole dream is predicated on there being no luck in life. And that's just simply not true.
Well, once again, the book is The Biggest Bluff, How I Learned to Pay Attention, Master Myself, and Win. Our guest today has been the New York Times bestselling author, Maria Konnikova. Maria, thank you so much for hanging out with us today. For people listening, where can they find out more about you and where can they pick up your book?
They can find out more about me on my website, which is mariakonnikova.com. But mostly, I don't update my website very often because I'm very bad at it. So mostly social media. Twitter is probably the best place where I'm at mkonnikova. And I'm also on Instagram at girl named Maria, except girl doesn't have an I. It's just GRL, not because I didn't know how to spell girl, but because someone had stolen the other handle before I could get it.
I love that. My first podcast was called Rock Your Life, and I found out somebody had Rock Your Life trademark, so I went with the UR, and I had to change that very quickly because it just looked bad, so I understand.
Yep, and my book is available anywhere that books are sold, so I would say support your local independent bookstore.
Very cool. Maria Konnikova, thank you so much for hanging out with me today on the Create Your Own Life show. I know I learned a ton, and so did our audience.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a blast.
Hey everyone, thank you so much for hanging out with Maria and myself today. You can check her out over at mariakonnikova.com, or I highly, highly recommend that you check out her book that we talked about today, The Biggest Bluff, How I Learned to Pay Attention, Master Myself, and Win. You're not going to learn just a lot about poker. You're going to learn a lot about how we operate and how we make decisions and a lot of cool jazz around that. You can get the show notes for this episode as well as everything mentioned in this episode over at jeremyryanslate.com/742.
for episode number 742. And as you guys know, I have a huge mission to help a lot of people, and you can actually help me do that. The easy way is by pulling out your mobile device right now and rating, reviewing, and subscribing to the show, opening up your podcast app to do that. Or you can head over to ratethispodcast.com/CYOL. And if you are kind enough to leave us a rating and review, I will read that on the air. All right, everyone. I'm really excited for the rest of the week we have coming up. We have a lot of incredible guests coming up for you. On the 15th, which is Wednesday, we have former NFL tight end Desmond Clark with us. The 17th, we have financial badass Eric Miller with us. And on Monday, we also have another really cool financial episode on the 20th, followed by author Brad Thor on the 22nd. So we have a lot of really cool stuff coming up for you in the next couple weeks. And this Friday, which is going to be coming out in a future episode, I'm going to be interviewing Jonathan Goldsmith, who you may know as the most interesting man in the world. So we're going to have the most interesting podcast interview in the world coming at you guys soon. We don't have it on the calendar yet, but as soon as that episode is coming out, I will let you know. All right, everyone, have an amazing, amazing day. Now get out there and go create your own life.